What's going on, everybody, and welcome into a special edition of B-Shape Daily, where we have a guest joining us on the program today. That's right. It won't just be my voice talking. You'll get to hear from somebody else, which I think should be exciting for most people. It's Ethan Hannaford. He is the booth assistant in the Cardinals Clubhouse reporter for KMOX. Does a great job. Ethan, thanks for joining me. How you doing today, my man?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, Brendan. Appreciate it. Hey, I mean, hearing your voice, it's a blessing to the people. So okay. Don't speak negatively on that, all right? This is a good thing that you give the people, all right?
Let's calm down, everybody. Okay, but no, I'm glad you're here. We're going to talk some Cardinals, and we're going to keep it broad and just kind of see where the conversation goes. Cardinals are 9-10. They've kind of been on that magnet at 500, below 500. They've been ping-ponging back and forth. We know the offense hasn't been great. The pitching in some spots has been really good and maybe even a pleasant surprise. I just want to get your general impressions to kick this off, man. What are your impressions of where the Cardinals are at right now after 19 games as we sit here on the off day Thursday?
Yeah, I think that the place that I would put the Cardinals, honestly, right now is right about where I expected them to be. This is a team that we knew going into the season, this was a tough schedule to start off the year. I mean, you've had to face the Dodgers, who, I mean, and all their godly team members that they have. But then even following that, I mean, San Diego, that's a good series win that the Cardinals were able to put together. But then the Phillies, who have been arguably the most consistent team in baseball the last two seasons. And so they've followed it up, and then the Arizona Diamondbacks. So, I mean, this is a team that's had a very difficult schedule to start off the season. So 9-10, being able to stay in the range where they are is about right where I expected them to be. Now, I will say this. If you would have told me a few weeks ago, a month ago, that this team's offensive numbers would look like they have and that they'd still be 9-10, that would have surprised me, because I think that going into the season, the expectation, the mindset was that this offense is going to carry this team. And it's almost been the opposite way around. I mean, it really has, where it's been the pitching in large part, both the front and back end, that's been carrying more of the heavy duty, I would say. So that part does surprise me a little bit, but the record wise, it's right there in the range, I think, through the first 19 games of where I expected them. I think you could also say a lot of St. Louis media expected them to be.
Yeah, I remember doing a podcast with Charlie Marlowe, like right before the season began. And I think I even said 9-10, if you can be right around there after the end of the Oakland series, ideally you'd win that, which they were able to get 2 of 3. Still haven't been able to win a series finale, which I think has caused them to be about where they are, haven't been able to close out those series. But I agree with you that it's not necessarily the final outcome too far from what expectations were. But as you mentioned, I do think the path to get here has been a bit surprising. Let's go ahead and start with the offense, because I feel like that's going to be where some of the negativity lies, and maybe we can get positive as we get into the pitching thereafter. But if you look at the numbers right now, you're impressed with Wilson Contreras. Mason Wynn and Ivan Herrera, I would say, have been pleasant surprises. You expected and hoped to see Wilson be a good hitter. Nupar is kind of an early going. He's only been up for about a week from the IL, but he's done a nice job so far. And Brendan Donovan has cooled off a little bit recently, but still decent numbers overall. Everybody else, though, if you look up and down this lineup, has been, I would argue, a disappointment. Is there anybody in particular, Ethan, that at this point, acknowledging that it's still early, that you would say you're a little bit more concerned about when it comes to the struggles of that particular player or players, if there's more than one? And why would that be? Why do you feel that way about the guys you're about to mention?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I would start off with saying, excuse me, that in the past, it's funny, when you're so early in the season, I feel like things can flip so quickly because you have so little sample size that you're going off of. I would say that probably a week ago, I was saying it was Nolan Arenado. That was the guy that was, he just looks uncomfortable at the plate. We saw the difference. We've seen the difference, right, in the follow-through, the two-handed swing and the one-handed swing, where he just looks way more comfortable when he's releasing and getting the full extension with the one hand. When it's two, however, he looks uncomfortable. He's using his upper body and twisting. It doesn't look very natural for a baseball swing. And, of course, the timing of that, Derek Gould just putting out a great piece, I believe it was yesterday, on the differences of that, you know, where those the swing, the difference in the one-hand, the two-hand swing from Nolan Arenado. But we saw in this past road trip, things started to click a little bit more for him. He looked way more comfortable in the box. He's taking the ball to all fields, which I think is honestly the best thing for him, because I think that early, at least, it was the mindset was so pull, pull, pull everything. And he's going to pull the ball regardless. If he's thinking opposite field, that's going to keep him more centered, but he's still going to pull the ball. But we've now seen the ability for him to be able to take the ball to right field, which we saw even yesterday in the game in the third game of the series against the A's. We saw him able to do that. And when he's able to take the ball to all fields, it just makes him a better baseball player. He seems more relaxed at the plate. Not like he's having to hit a 3-run homer every single at bat. And we know Nolan's a guy that puts a lot of pressure on himself. He said it even this offseason, coming into this season, even with this lineup expecting to be what they're going to be, he still puts that pressure on himself that he's the one that needs to drive runs in. And I think we saw that in his at bats early in the season, perhaps just a little bit too much pressure on himself. But I would say that he is a guy that has looked better the past, I'd say, 6 games or so. The one that I'm starting to get a little bit more on the fence about, it's still early, but Paul Goldschmidt continues to look uncomfortable at the plate. My whole defense, my whole reasoning these past several weeks for his struggles as well, we've seen him be a guy in the past that has had those early season struggles. I don't know if you remember back to, was it 2018, 19? His first season in St. Louis, he did not swing well in the month of April. And I believe it was 2021, the year before he won his MVP, he didn't swing again. 2 of his seasons in St. Louis, he has not started the year off swinging the bat very hot. So I give him a little bit more layaway because he has had that tendency to kind of have to break it in a little bit per se. But, and you tweeted something out that, you know, I think, or yesterday, that people do need to start keeping an eye on. He's swinging and missing a lot right now. The strikeout percentage is pretty high. And that is something that is a little bit concerning with a guy like him. He's been around for so long and he knows what he's doing. He's played this game so well for so long. I feel like it's still a little bit early to really start to jump on the panic mode. Some people you see on Twitter are, oh, this guy should have been traded last offseason, or this guy, the no extension for him. I'm like, guys, slow down. We're 19 games in. Let's let things develop out. Let's let things play out and let a guy that's had a lot of success in this game for a really long time, let's let him get a feel for things. I would say those are probably the 2 main ones. The one outside of that, sorry, I know I'm talking.
No, it's good.
The other one that I would say, and I hate that it seems like this is just the game he's starting to develop, is Nolan Gorman. Continues to be a really streaky player. We saw him last year. I mean, it was hot, cold, hot, cold. I mean, you look at the monthly splits last year. I mean, some months you would think that he was an MVP candidate, and some months you're thinking, why is this guy in the lineup? I mean, it was not pretty at times, and at times it was very good. Early in the year, the strikeouts are way higher than they were last year. It almost looks comfort level, kind of like it did that first season, first little bit of time that he had in the majors from a swing and miss perspective. I think that'll once again be something that he figures out, but maybe this is going to be more of the normal for him. Maybe he's going to be more of a 3-result guy, where he's going to the home run, the strikeout, the walk. Maybe that's going to be more his style. It's just going to, like I said, we're 3 weeks in. We're going to have to wait and see what his true hitting style is going to be as he continues to develop as a major league ball player.
Yeah, and I know people like to harp on lineup construction. And when there's a couple of weeks that goes a particular way, fans, understandably, because that it feels like the only thing you can change, they say, well, let's do this. Let's move Goldie down from the number 2. Let's do this or that. And everybody's kind of got an opinion, which is one of the things that makes baseball so much fun and so great. However, I think with Gorman in particular, as we kind of go through, because I think the guys you named are really good answers to this. Arenado, I would agree, has sort of turned the corner. I like that he's pulling the ball with authority, but I would say that the swing that you mentioned in game 3 against Oakland, it was a very Yadier Molina-like swing when he went inside out and served it into right field, particularly because it was a hit and run. I was like, for him to be able to be in a spot where he can do that and just get bat to ball, that's not something I think we saw from him in the first couple of weeks. So that really did impress me and tell me a lot about where he is as far as turning the corner. Gorman, I think, is interesting because if the other guys are performing, the guys that are making the big salaries and are typically in the middle of your lineup, and I do think Newt Barr is going to start to be more that number 3 hitter, move him up in the order compared to when Nolan Gorman was there prior to Newt's return, I feel like that puts Gorman in a spot where lineup-wise, there is a little bit less pressure on him because he's batting maybe down in the 6 hole rather than batting in the first inning in that number 3 spot. And so as a result, I think as a Cardinal team, you can afford a little more hot cold with him, and I think that is sort of been his game. So that to me isn't even the end of the world. I do expect Gorman to turn it on at some point. You would like to see those valleys be a little bit less frequent and shorter in length, but that may just kind of be part of what we have to endure when it comes to Gorman. Goldie is the interesting one because as you were talking about him, I pulled up those stats you were alluding to back in 2021. And keep in mind, this April occurred, and the following year, he was the best hitter in the National League and won the MVP. But to Ethan's point, April of 2021, he finished it with a 597 OPS, and albeit right now he's lower than that, around 518. But that was in 109 plate appearances. He struck out 28 times. Right now, through 78 plate appearances this season, he struck out 22 times and has a 517 OPS. It's not too dissimilar. So to recognize that there have been instances in the past where Goldie has been, maybe he's a little worse right now because he's a sub-200 batting average. That wasn't the case in 21. He's a little bit lower on the OPS. But when we're looking at the strikeout stuff, maybe we just have a short memory, and he was probably looking similar to this at times in that 21 campaign. And I know that the age is different now. He's older than he was then. But I do think that's an interesting point, that there are some similarities to what happened then and what's happening now with Goldie. But I will say the strikeout AAB that he had game three in Oakland, it looked like three pitches that caught plenty of the strike zone, and he just was swinging through them. And so that's a little bit discouraging for where things are right now. And I would say the other part of this, Ethan, and I'll get your thought, when it comes to the meat of this lineup and the guys that you talked about that have sort of been going through it a little bit, I key in on specifically Arenado and Goldie. Those are the guys that are making the money. Those are the guys that I think when this offense and this rotation and everything was designed together to say, is this a team that can win 85, 87 games? And the front office looks at it in the offseason and says, we kind of like where we're at. I think you have to almost pencil in your dudes to be dudes. And last year, Goldie and Arenado had down years by their standards. But even compared to those years, we're seeing less numbers from them right now. So is there a world in which, let's just say these guys, they finish as league average. They're like 105 OPS plus. Is there a world to you where the Cardinals can find a way to still contend if that's the case for these two players? Or do you find that that's going to be difficult to see the Cardinals through that? I'm curious for your take on that.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think that the thing that we need to start asking ourselves about these players is, you know, we've seen in 2022 and 2023, we saw very polar like sides of what Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt will be. The question we need to start asking ourselves is Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt for the remainder of their career, or at least at this point, are they going to be closer to what they were in 2022? When they were both top three MVP candidates, of course, Goldie winning the MVP had the over 1,000 OPS and Arenado was at right around 900. Is that what they're going to be? Or are they going to be closer to what they were in 2023, where Arenado, that OPS, I think, was around 775, ended with 26, 27 home runs, right under 100 RBIs. I'm not recollecting Goldie's numbers off of the top of my head. But they were both in similar ballparks, right? But they were big drop-offs, like you said. Not to say that I think that those two players are going to struggle as much this year for themselves as they did last year. But I think one could make an argument, potentially, that what we saw in 2023 might be a little bit closer to the future for these guys. They're aging. I mean, and it's funny, I said this the other day on another podcast. I mean, it's funny to look at Paul Goldschmidt and to look at Nolan Arenado and say that they're aging, because I mean, in reality, they're in their early 30s, or I guess Arenado's in his early 30s and Goldie's what, 36, 37?
Yeah, I'm 29 and I don't look like that.
Right. So. Exactly. So that is funny on one hand to be saying, but sorry about that.
All good.
But the game is so intense, and it's, I mean, let's be honest, it is completely controlled by the youth. More and more, the game is getting younger every single year, and that doesn't mean that guys like Goldie and Arenado aren't going to still have success. It just, I think that we need to start keeping an eye on what the expected level of success from those guys should be. Nolan Arenado is going to have an OPS over 800 this year. I have no doubt about that. And the same with Paul Goldschmidt. They could very well completely blow my expectations out of the water for them this year and have stellar seasons and be closer to what they were in 2022. But I feel as though it's unfair to put that high of expectation and say that if they don't do that, this team is going to be in a worse spot. And the difference between this team and 2022's team is that team, the third piece, the surrounding piece was Albert Pujols, old man Albert, who if he wouldn't have had the run he did in the second half of the season, this team probably doesn't make the playoffs. On the other side, you look at this team now and you look at the supporting cast that Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt have. Contreras, Nolan Gorman, Jordan Walker. Yes, he's going to figure it out. You have Lars Nootbaar, who's totally developed in a whole different player. Brendan Donovan at the top of the lineup. And then you got guys like Mason Wynn, who is, you know, exceeding everyone's expectations offensively right now. So the offense is way more built from top to bottom to where I don't think that and they're going to probably put that pressure on themselves, especially Nolan Arenado. But the pressure doesn't have to necessarily all be on them, because as they get older, you have to expect that with age, to a certain extent, the numbers are probably going to take at least some sort of small decline. You'd have to assume a little bit, right? But as they do, the hope is that guys like Nolan Gorman, Jordan Walker, that they're going to continue to progress in a good direction to where this all kind of, my hope is that it evens out to where the expectations and the offensive power, the firepower, is reliant on just your two big guys. And yes, they are making the majority of the money. They're the ones making the big bucks right now. So the expectation should be more so on their shoulders than it should be on Nolan Gorman, Jordan Walker, some of these guys. But I think we need to have a realistic understanding of, as they get older, there's going to be a point where we're going to be able to clearly say, yeah, Nolan Arenado, Paul Goldschmidt, they're not in their peaks anymore as players. They're still good players, but they're not in their peaks.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. So maybe the way to frame it then is understanding that there might be a bit of a decline, but if they can still kind of get to about last year's numbers, and I would say for Arenado in particular, better than last year. I think Goldie was like an 810 OPS. Arenado's he was dealing with the back and different things at the end, and the numbers just fell off, and he ended up ending the season on the IL. It was like the final month he played, didn't have a single homer post August 19th. So I think from that perspective, you can basically say he was around 800 last year if you discount the last couple of weeks when he was gritting through it and then eventually realized it's not worth it to keep doing it for this 90-loss team. So I think if they can just get back to those numbers last year, and then you got to recognize, okay, they were those numbers last year and the team still lost 91 games, so what has to change? If they're only able to get back to those numbers, it does sort of pass the buck a little bit to say, all right, can Gorman establish and can Jordan Walker establish? Because he's a guy that we didn't really talk about but has struggled early on. I say we don't really have to add a bunch to that because at age 20/21, he put up better than league average numbers last year. I think Jordan Walker is going to be okay and is just kind of going through that process. But it is going to be an interesting dichotomy because if the superstars do take a bit of a step back, which we've seen an early decline for them, but we recognize that when the weather heats up, they both tend to get going. If that happens, but not to 2022 levels, that it will be a little bit more incumbent upon a guy like Jordan Walker to figure that out. But he's batting lower in the lineup too, and I think there is a world in which this lineup can end up being okay. But my whole drumbeat for the beginning of the season was this does need to be a top 10 lineup in baseball, I think, in order to have this Cardinals team be competitive, considering the pitching staff that they built and that they knowingly went out and said, we're going to understand that this is maybe not as high upside of a rotation as going out for some of the guys out in free agency or in the trade market that we could get. But the Cardinals made it known they wanted innings and they wanted veteran guys who know the ropes and are going to be able to provide those innings more often than not, guys like Kyle Gibson and guys like Lance Lynn. Now, I think Lance Lynn has upside. We'll kind of transition here to talk about the pitching a bit. Lance Lynn is showing the upside that he has to be able to do both, kind of get deep into games and also with frequency not give up very many runs. To me, he's probably the number two in this rotation right now, unless we see a real run from Miles Michaelis to be able to disprove that. But let's get into the pitching. What has been your interpretation and your impression so far of specifically the starting rotation, and then we can get into the bullpen a little bit after that?
Surprised. Excited, but surprised. I think we'll start with the top, and that would be Sonny Gray. And when you look at Sonny Gray and what he's been able to do, obviously it's only been 11 innings of evidence so far, but I think that excuse me, the expectation for Sonny Gray going in was, yes, this is going to be a guy that can be your number one, but correct me if you disagree, but I feel like not a lot of people expected him to really mimic what he did in 2023 from a being a top contender for the Cy Young. I mean, a lot of the expected ERA and some of those numbers were higher than what they ended up being. I think it was around 3.5 was the expected ERA and ended up being 2.85 or right around there. So early on, he's looked really good. He's looked really comfortable on the mound. I've been a real big fan of his stuff. So if he can, you could even argue that there is a way for him to exceed expectations, at least for what I have set. If he's able to do that, then talk about, you know, what it would be like to have a guy that you know you can count on. Yeah, you're gonna be able to reel in a win tonight. That's why I'm so excited he's going to be pitching in this series against Milwaukee, because in my eyes, this is a series early in the year you need to come away with, and you need to, you're at home. The games in the Central matter more now because there's not nearly as many of them. Having a guy like him on the mound for one of them, I think, is going to be really important. So I really like what I'm seeing from Sonny Gray. Obviously, early, it's hard to say you can't when he hasn't allowed an earned run yet.
Yeah.
That's closer, I think, to expectation, right? Because we expected him to be the number one. The other guys, you know, it seemed like going into the year, there was just a mix. It was a number one, and then there was a mix of 3, 4, 5 guys. And those 3, 4, 5 guys have performed pretty well, all things considered. You mentioned Lance Lynn and what he's been able to do so far this year. The strikeout stuff has been great. The home run has affected him at times. But I think the biggest thing is how he's recovered from those home runs allowed and has been able to work his way out of trouble. We've seen that in multiple situations. The one most notably, I think, his first start against the Dodgers, where he allowed those 3 base hits, but then was able to get out of trouble with strikeouts. We're seeing him using his strikeout ability to his advantage to work his way out of issues. So that's been, I think, my biggest, I don't want to say surprise, but I think the thing I've been most happy with Lance Lynn, and he's just able to mow through innings. They said something on the broadcast, Chip and Brad did, a couple of nights ago after his, I think he was through 6 innings of work, and Ollie asked, you know, how's he looking? And he was like, I'm just getting warmed up or something like that, just getting going. So you love a guy that just wants to go out there and mow through batters, because it is so opposite of today's Major League Baseball, where young guys are throwing less and less innings, it seems like, every single year. And honestly, you need a guy like Lance Lynn who can go out there and mow down 7 innings of work and do it regardless of conditions. We've seen him throw in rain multiple times and throw well. We've seen him throw in good conditions. So really happy with what I've seen from Lance Lynn so far. The other 3 in the rotation, Steven Matz has been good. I know he had a little bit of a hiccup yesterday, but the reason that I'm excited about Steven Matz, I think, at this point is, you know, obviously if he can stay healthy, but you look at a guy that this isn't just going off of 3 starts that we're, you know, taking the sample size for. We're looking at what he's done pretty much from the entire, since the month of July, August, whenever he came back from the bullpen. He's been consistently good, and that's why I think you have to start asking the question. Well, I think going into the season, most people were probably viewing him as a 4 or 5 in this rotation. Where does Steven Matz, where's he going to line up as this continues moving on? Where's he going to fit in that rotation talent-wise? Like, where would you rank him? That's a question that, if he continues on the track he is, that people are going to have to start thinking about and asking. Kyle Gibson, it's been a little bit hot, cold, but honestly, kind of what we expected from him. He's a quality innings guy. If you look at his numbers from last year, the large majority of them were quality innings, and then he had the blowups on the occasion. He's had a couple of blowups early, but I don't expect that we're going to see 2 out of every 3 starts are going to be allowing, you know, 5 runs. I think he allowed 4 in his last one against Arizona. But so that's pretty close to on par with what we've seen from him so far. And then Michaelis, I think, is better than a 4.76 ERA. I think he'll figure things out. I think that Lance Lynn's definitely making an argument for being the second best pitcher. He is right now to start off the season, I think, but I don't know if I would solidify that for the remainder of the season or even for the next month or two. I think that you need to see a little bit more from some of these guys before you can really line up where they rank 1 through 5. But overall, You know, I know we're talking specifically about the rotation. We'll get into the bullpen, but the correlation between the success of the bullpen and what the starting rotation's been able to do in putting up consistent innings has been game changer for that bullpen, been huge. So the starting rotation is doing their job, and it's directly correlating into the bullpen being able to do theirs.
Yeah, that's been key. And look, some of the ERAs, like you mentioned, are a little bit higher. We'll see what Gibby's able to do. As far as Michaelis, he's had a couple rough ones and then a couple that were quality starts. He's going at least six and giving up two or three runs. So that's something that you can kind of hang your hat on. And it's what the Cardinals were looking for. They knew that they were going to get innings from Miles Michaelis. They did last year. It wasn't a great year ERA-wise for him, but he still got you the 200 innings. And if you can add in the guys like Lynn and the guy like Gibson that you expect to be able to be maybe not 200 innings guys, you know, Gibson, if you can get 180 out of him, I think you'd be happy. Lance Lynn, 180 to 190, I think you'd be thrilled. If you can have that as realistically like toward the back end of your rotation, and then Sonny Gray just be the guy that every fifth day you show up to the ballpark expecting to win the game. It won't happen every single time, but there's value to having a true stud on the mound that's truly performing still in the prime of his career. I understand he's 34 years old, but you look at what he's doing and it's impossible. I don't think anybody would argue against him still being in that prime, at least for what he's doing right now. And then you mentioned Steven Matz. It's kind of difficult. Is he your five? Is he your three? Is he like, how do you figure him? I talked about this the other day where let's get into an idea where the Cardinals are in a playoff series. I think Matz could be one of the three guys you'd turn to, but you maybe make the decision to only have him go four innings because we've seen him have at times get blown up in the fifth. And playoff series, I know that people want to talk about Ollie removing Quintana in the game against the Phillies, where I still maintain it was a brilliant move, and it was something that he said before the game he was going to do, and they just got bad luck with Helsley coming up with a numb finger. But nevertheless, I think that's a scenario where if you get into a series like that, it might make sense to get four innings out of a Steven Matz and then just take him out when you can kind of sense that his strength is waning. But you mentioned him, so I'll pull up this stat. I saw it on Twitter the other day. Since the, like July of last year, Steven Matz has the best ERA in baseball at a 1.84. Now, that was before the little bit of a rough start yesterday, but second place was Kyle Bradish at 2.34 on this chart, and Bradish is injured right now. So Matz likely still has that with just a little bit of a higher number. By the way, Sonny Gray, 2.36. So it's pretty good that you have another guy who's matching pretty highly on that list. But what you said, I think, about the bullpen being something that is strengthened by what the starters have been able to do, I couldn't agree more with that sentiment. And by the way, it's why the Cardinals went out and attacked the offseason the way they did. People say, well, why would you want innings eaters if the innings aren't quality? It's about being able to use your roster effectively. And instead of carrying guys that, well, we might just need a mop-up man or two or three in the bullpen, that's basically what they had to end the season in August and September last year. Just a bunch of guys who took turns going four innings to just get you through. That's not realistic in a way to win games. So now you're looking at guys like Ryan Helsley, like Jojo Romero, playing their best baseball that we've seen in a while. Andrew Kittredge has been really, really strong. What's your interpretation of the way the bullpen has looked? We know the starters and their ability to go deep has impressed and made that a possibility. But how do you feel about the bullpen right now, especially with the Cardinals? They have a one-run lead going into the seventh. I think you feel pretty decently on a day where everybody's available because the track record to this point has spoken for itself.
And just wait until the offense gets going. Hopefully the offense is able to get going.
Ideally,
right?
Yeah.
This bullpen's going to be even better because right now there's a lot of high-stress innings that this bullpen is being forced to throw. Once the offense gets into a little bit more of a routine, and I'll say this, even if the offense ends up being subpar to what people expect, it's going to be better than what it has been right now because it has been really bad to start off the year as a whole. I mean, one of the worst in baseball. It will not be that. I mean, I think a realistic expectation for this offense was that it could be a top 10 offense, a top 10 lineup in baseball. And subpar of that, you know, you're looking at league average slightly below. That's even below, or that's above where they are right now. So this offense is going to be better. That's going to help the bullpen also because there's going to be hopefully more, you know, less stressful innings. I say that because Ryan Helsley's had to throw in every single game that the Cardinals have won so far. And
yeah.
He's been lights out. And when your closer's lights out, we saw it 2 years ago. When you know going into the ninth that your closer is going to shut things down and that the game is at hand, it gives a certain sense of comfort to your team. Even a couple years ago when Alex Reyes was back there, I mean, he was very good, but it seemed like things were very rickety and that there was a lot of games that were runners on to end the game. Ryan Helsley right now is just mowing guys down. Guys are not getting on base ever since Oh, I guess it was that start against, or that, not start, that save opportunity against LA early in the year where we thought, oh gosh, are we going to have a repeat of Ryan Helsley in 2024 compared to what 2023 was? And 23 wasn't bad. It just wasn't the Ryan Helsley we saw in 2022 or anywhere near it. So for him to be able to do what he's doing has been really good. But even you look at what they were able to add in the offseason, and I tell you what, people can say what they want about John Mozeliak, but if you're going to dog on him for not adding the way you wanted to him to in the offseason, you better pat his back for what he's done with this bullpen, because you look at what he's been able to acquire, the acquiring Jojo Romero for Edmundo Sosa, trading Richie Palacios for Andrew Kittredge, the Keenan Middleton acquisition. Obviously, we haven't seen that play out yet, but I view that as when he's back, this rotation's or this bullpen's only going to be better, because then, a guy like Andre Pallante or someone that's maybe been struggling a little bit more, maybe that he gets sent down, continues to work on his craft and figure things out, kind of like he had a couple of years ago. So this bullpen right now is looking really solid. And like I said, that's correlating in large part because they're not being forced to come in the fifth inning every single day like they were supposed to, or like they had to last year. Last year was also a pretty decent bullpen in my eyes to start off the season. They just got thrown, they threw so much early that it just seemed like they just gassed out so quickly that it wasn't a fair reflection of how talented that bullpen was. It's even better this year. So Jojo Romero, that's a guy that no one expected to do what he's doing at the beginning of last year. So he's been a huge add to your bullpen. I have to imagine that Giovanni Gallegos is going to figure things out a little bit. That's a guy that I am a little bit concerned with right now because we saw last year the struggles that he had, and just, man, he just tends to leave that slider is either lives and dies by it. Sometimes it is one of the nastiest pitches in baseball, and sometimes he leaves it hanging, and guys are going to take it 400 feet to somewhere out of the ballpark. So, if he can, I know I've been saying a lot of if this person can figure this out, if this person can figure this out. I don't think Giovanni Gallegos is going to be a mid fives ERA guy, even if he is the sub four ERA guy, like he has been consistently throughout his career. What that's going to be able to do for that bullpen is only add another piece that you can rely on. But the nice thing, and I'd say the biggest difference for him last year between this year and last year is, we saw him get, he was mostly being used in the eighth and ninth inning last year, and he wasn't at his best. And that was putting a lot of pressure on that bullpen as a whole for him. And on him, and for him to be able to not have to be the guy that has to get it all figured out. We've seen him come in multiple times this year in the sixth inning. I love that. A guy that has not had his best stuff to start off the year consistently, not having to have high pressure innings to start off the year to be able to work through some of that. I absolutely love that the Cardinals have had the luxury of being able to use him like that.
Yeah, because I think if you look at the way you would slot that bullpen working backward, you'd think Ryan Helsley is your guy in the ninth, as we know. But you feel good about JoJo and Kittredge handling the seventh or eighth in whatever order is necessary to do that. And so it does afford you the chance to use Gio in some different spots. But even if he's in there in the sixth inning, sometimes that's with the heart of the order coming up. And you're like, it could be a lot worse than having a guy like Gio who's been through the wars to be able to bring into those spots rather than, an unknown commodity that you're not too fond of or you just don't know about. As far as what he would do in those spots just yet, it's really been the home run ball that has hurt Gio. It was the same thing last year, and that's something he's going to have to work through and get a handle on. But I've noticed, like last year, anytime he gave up a homer, it seemed like a second one was on the way. He had that happen multiple times in the same outing. And this year, it's been a little bit different, where he gave up the runs in the fifth inning, I think, when he came in to try and rescue the other day. But then in one of the games, and he pitched a clean sixth after that, so he's able to sort of bounce back. And like you said, he's maybe fourth or fifth on the totem pole right now in terms of guys that you're looking for high leverage innings from. I think we'll also see another guy that we haven't mentioned just yet, but Liberatore has a good ERA. You want to see him kind of calm it down with the walks that he's allowed. I think it's like 5 and 9 innings to this point, but he's another guy that I think as he gets more comfortable with his role could end up establishing himself as well and being another weapon out there too. I also like what we've seen from Ryan Fernandez, probably toward the bottom of the list in terms of guys that are going to get leverage opportunities. But if he's the last reliever in your bullpen, I still think you can feel pretty decently about that. And then if they can just get Keenan back and Riley O'Brien, I think he's got something to contribute as well. There's a world in which this bullpen ends up being a top unit. They rank right now ninth in MLB and ERA to this point. So interesting with where the Cardinals are. I know it's maybe not the hot takery that some people would like to hear, but they're in the middle. I know they're in last in the division, but I think that's going to level out a little bit. But this team is still kind of in the mix, which is a lot more than they were last year and is about what I think you could have hoped for to this point. But Ethan said it, and I think he's 100% right. These divisional games that are starting up now are going to matter. It's kind of weird that the Cardinals haven't played anybody within the NL Central yet, but they're going to get the Brewers this weekend at Busch. You have Gray going on Sunday. Taking 2 of 3 from Milwaukee, I think, is critical if you want to start to establish yourself and not be considered the also-ran, because they were in last in the division last year. Everybody else in the Central, not used to that being the case, and I imagine that they relished in it. But I think you want to start early on by saying, hey, that's not really going to be the case again this year, Central. You are going to have to contend with the Cardinals. And the way to do that is by beating those teams head-to-head so you can leave that impression on them. So we'll see what it ends up looking like. It's been a blast talking with Ethan about the team, but I want to talk with Ethan a little bit about Ethan. So you're the Cardinals clubhouse reporter for KMOX, which is really cool. See you down there in the clubhouse, mixing it up, getting involved. And you're also booth assistant for KMOX. Tell me a little bit about your background and how you got into this and where you'd like to go from here. Just kind of talk about you for a minute, because I think Cardinals fans, they say, well, who's this young kid? What's he doing? He's a sharp guy, and I want Cardinals fans to get a chance to get to know you a bit.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Brendan. Yeah, so I graduated from Lindenwood University last spring with a broadcasting degree. This is my second year working for the Cardinals. I work for the Cardinals and KMOX, both together and separately, because to a certain extent, I mean, the Cardinals and KMOX go together, but they're also separate jobs.
Sure.
So I work at KMOX as a producer. I do a lot of different shows there, helping out pretty much wherever it's needed, honestly. Produce some Cardinal games. If you ever hear John Rooney throwing my name out there, that's either as producing those games or running the board, making sure that everything's running smoothly throughout the Cardinals radio network. And then sometimes that's also as the booth assistant, which is in the broadcasting booth. I'm working directly with John Rooney, Ricky Horton, Mike Claiborne, as well as all the other broadcasters, Brad Thompson, Chip Carey, Benji Molina, Polo Sencio, and then continues on. I'm working with all of those guys, pretty much doing whatever I can to make sure that their broadcast is going as smooth as possible, whether that be specifically more so with the KMOX guys, with John, Ricky, and Claibs. It's passing on game notes, it's passing on statistics, anything that they may be receiving from our stats department upstairs in the area where you're hanging out during the game, up in the press box. It's communicating when it's different numbers. Ricky loves the numbers. He loves some of those different numbers that come out, some of the more modern ones that the StatCast provides. So I'm, you know, keeping up on those based on the play-by-play and what's going on, what numbers he may like or statistics he may enjoy. That's some of the more fun part of that job, is getting to actively contribute to things that are being said and going out over air. Helping out with that part is really cool. And then, like I said, it's mostly just whatever I can do to make the broadcast go smoother for those guys. And then once post-game hits, I head downstairs, as you do, with all the writers and media. And I'm in the room with Oliver Marmol as he's doing his post-game comments and asking questions. And then head on over to the clubhouse and do the same. And the audio that I'm grabbing, that I'm interviewing players for, is being used on the Cardinals Radio Network in their post-game show. That usually Matt Pauley's running. So constantly working with those guys as well, getting them that audio. So yeah, a few of the different things that I do right there, but absolutely love being able to, at this point in my life, at 24. Yeah, I'm 24.
Okay. Yeah. No, check on that.
I forget how old I am.
Okay.
But
we'll work on it.
Yeah. Something like that, you know? So being able to actively contribute and help out with all of those things is a lot of fun. So I graduated with a broadcasting degree, so the dream is to get into broadcasting at some point, and just trying to continue working my way up, but definitely surrounding myself with some of the best has definitely been a huge point for me, a blessing, but also has really helped me grow in just knowledge and understanding of this business.
Yeah, and you do a great job, and to be doing it all at 23, 24, whichever one you are. Hopefully you get a handle on that and figure that out. But it is really cool, and it's cool to see you down there. You're basically, in some ways, now I was never important enough to work for KMOX, but you're basically me from about 6 years ago when I was, you know, 21, 22, just getting into the mix. I want to hear from your perspective. Well, what's that like? What's that? Take people into the clubhouse and kind of your perspective of what goes on. And when you're at the Ollie Marmol presser, you go, hey, I'm trying to get in the mix here. I'm going to ask this question. What's that experience been like for you as a young guy, just kind of getting into the business? Just how have you kind of felt about that personally?
Yeah, absolutely. And first off, I gotta say, I am actually 23. And the reason it gets confusing for me is because I'm a 2000 baby, but I was born in September.
Doing the math.
So you think, well, my mindset doesn't go to like September of, it goes to just 2000, and now we're in 2024. So I automatically say, oh, I'm 24. See, but then I got to remember, we haven't hit September yet.
Now, wait a minute. Nobody else can do that because we weren't all born in a year that ends in 000. So you're like, your whole life, you've just been cheating and going, just whatever the year we're in, that's the number. Like that's a little bit too easy. And so I feel like that's why your experience with what's your age might be a little bit different than other people.
Most people are able to just say that off the top. Oh, I'm 31.
You've been coddled by the year. That's just a different experience, but no, that's okay. We're just kidding you.
Yeah. So that's my excuse for not immediately remembering my age there. But as far as working in the media at such a young age, I think that there's a couple of different things that I have used that have helped me grow to have some success in it. Obviously, working with the Cardinals, there is a lot of talented media broadcasters, writers like yourself that are around. So one, being respectful that this is you guys have been doing this for a long time, and I'm the new guy. There's been a level of respect of, you know, you guys are going to be the ones that are, or, you know, the Katie Woos, the Derek Goulds, the Brendan Schaefers that are going to be the ones that are asking those questions first. You guys are kind of, you're on the floor, you're on the room, you know? So, that's one of the parts of it is recognizing where exactly I am on that totem pole. But also, being a sponge, I mean, just trying to soak up as much knowledge and information from those interview rooms as well, because there is a lot of wisdom in that room. I mean, years and years of knowledge and wisdom from how to best go about some of these things. And I've learned what things to do and things to say and things not to ask and things to not say. And so I think that there is a lot of wisdom from using your ears and not always your mouth, even in this business, especially early on, allowed for me to be, you know, smart and pick and choose what I've gotten to say. And I think that has definitely carried me a long way in this. It hasn't even been a year that I've been in the clubhouse, because I didn't start until last July. So I think that has gone a long way. And the more that I've been around those people, and the more I've been able to pick their brains, and the more I've been able to just grow in knowledge, the more confidence that has grown as well, to be able to ask more and more questions and to not have to, oh man, have it all prepped out what I'm going to ask. So I think that there's definitely a few different things that go into that, but I think those would probably be some of the main things as far as just building an idea of what does it look like to, at such a young age, be doing what I'm doing.
That's really cool, man. And cool to get your perspective on that. I also want to get your, and by the way, stop trumping me up. I'm just a guy out there trying to do the same thing as you. So I've continued to say that for years and years. And I'd like to, again, I tell people all the time, I'd like to be at more of those pre-games and on the field and different things and post-games, but I do other radio shows too. So sometimes I'm not able, but I get in the mix where I can. And the same as you, and Jim the Cat Hayes told me too, when I was about your age, he said, don't worry about, you know, deferring to people, just get there, get in the mix, and, you know, be confident in what you're doing. And I think you do a great job of that as well. But yeah, just a compliments to you on how you're handling it so far. Cause it isn't the easiest thing in the world to kind of enter into that world and be like, it looks like everybody else already knows what they're doing, so I'm just going to have to kind of learn as I go. And I've been there. So, and still in some ways feel like I'm still there. So don't ever sweat that. But I wanted to ask you to kind of let you go on this one. Personal question about what it's like to work with guys like Ricky Horton and John Rooney and Mike Claiborne, these guys that have been doing this for so long and have all that wisdom to pass down. How gratifying is that been for you, just kind of getting your feet wet at this point to say, you look around and say, these guys have a lot of wisdom to impart. And you mentioned it with kind of being a sponge, but what's that been like to kind of be behind the scenes with folks like that, that have been doing what you want to do for so long?
Well, first off, I appreciate the words, and I appreciate those very much. So very kind of you. It is been an absolute blessing to be able to work with these guys. The coolest part about what I have noticed, and I've heard it said multiple times, but Mike Claiborne does a great job of reminding me that when you're up here with us, when you're up here every day, you're family. And they have done such a good job of treating me so well and being so kind to me. And I think part of that is in that, I work my butt off to make sure that they need what they need. And I think they see that. And I truly care about what is going on. And I think that's seen. I think that you could say that from any professionality, that if you are putting care and effort in, someone's going to notice, and there will be repercussions to benefit from for that. So I think part of it's been that, but like you mentioned, these guys have years and years of wisdom. There's only 30, 60 seats if you combine TV and radio, play-by-play voices in baseball. So, I mean, it is a very difficult field that a lot of guys try to get into, and for them to be there and to have done it so long, so much wisdom and so many different things. One, from just how to watch the game, but also how to call the game. So there's, as I'm sure you can understand, I mean, so many different tidbits and little bits of information that they are doing. And one, like I said, the way that they're calling the game and discussing and things they're looking for, but also in their prep for the games as well, and the things that they're doing. And I've learned so much just from helping them and watching them, what they are keeping an eye on to use during the games and different things. So that has also been a huge help to have structure in a broadcast as well. They do such a good job. Everything is the same way every single day, as far as the prep and what they're building up for, what to say, when to start things off at the beginning of broadcasts. And having structure to a broadcast is, I think, absolutely huge to have your ducks in a row. It just helps you be able to stay on point. So, and you notice that with the Bally's guys too, with Chip and Brad and Chip and Jim, they do a really good job of that as well. So I think the biggest thing for me is, being able to use these guys as, these are guys I've connected with. They know what I want to do. They have been great in supporting me in my career and in me wanting to do what I want to do, and being able to pick their brains and, share my own demos with them and them to critique and give feedback and for me to work on those things. So that's also been really helpful so far early in my career as well, to be able to get wisdom from talented guys like them has been absolutely huge.
Very cool, man. Great to hear all that. I really appreciate you for joining me. Folks out there, Cardinals fans, if you haven't done this yet, you should. Ethan is on Twitter putting out some great stuff all the time, and his handle is there on the screen if you're watching the video version of this. If it's audio only, just search Ethan Hannaford on Twitter. It's at ECHANN7. E is that EH Han, I guess, would be the way that you would pronounce that. Middle name?
So it's actually E Chan, because E-chan. My middle name starts with a C. So okay. That's where the C comes from. Yeah.
E Chan with a double N7. Follow Ethan on Twitter. Keep an eye out for all the great work. Listen for John Rooney to say his name, which will happen all the time on the KMOX broadcast. Ethan, appreciate the time today, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll have to have you on again soon for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it. And if you guys obviously, keep listening and hear the great stuff that you're constantly putting out, Brendan. If you guys need another podcast outlet, the Loose Sports Talk podcast, feel free to check that one out. Me and a couple of my broadcasting buddies putting out some good content on that as well. But yeah, would appreciate if you guys gave that a listen as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll make sure to link that in the description on YouTube. So thanks, Ethan. And we'll catch you next time, brother.
Thank you very much, Brendan. I appreciate you having me on.
So that'll do it for this edition of B-Schaefer Daily. Make sure you hit that subscribe button on YouTube, youtube.com/@B-Schaefer12, and follow B-Schaefer Daily on Spotify for more Cardinals content all season long. For Ethan Hannaford, I'm Brendan Schaefer. We'll talk to you next time on B-Schaefer Daily. Peace.